Racing HQ is brought to you by TAB. Get a bonus bet up to $50 for second and third on selected races this weekend. Gamble responsibly.
We're looking forward to this, the chance to have a chin wag with John Hawkes. Good morning, John. How are you?
Morning, Sean. Yeah, well, thank you.
Now, I want to wind the clock back and let you listen to a race you won. I reckon it'd be one that must have given you a massive amount of satisfaction.
600 out as they near the turn. Regal Chamber, the leader. Guineas is second. General Nadine, third. Encounter, fourth. Getting a perfect run. Rose of Danehill, three deep. Then Nimble Feet, Decide on the fence. Followed by Sports. Rose of Danehill made the bend awkwardly. And Knowledge is giving them about eight lengths as they turn for home. Regal Chamber giving plenty of cheek in the straights. Guineas on the outside, throwing down the gauntlet. The General looking for the rails. Run Encounter on the extreme outside with the last run at them. General Nadine got right through on the fence to join Regal Chamber. Guineas and Encounter on the outside. Encounter and Guineas. Encounter has run off the track, is lunging again as they hit the line, and oh, it's close. Guineas.
Well, John, it was definitely close that day. Did you think you'd won the Golden Slipper?
Yeah, I sort of did where I was watching it from. I mean, we might have been lucky to win that one, but we've been unlucky to, and get beaten a few, so it always balances itself out, but No, it was a great thrill. Jack and Bob were, fantastic to me for, a lot of years. And, you'll never forget those sort of 15 years that I was there. And that was just one of the special moments. We had an awful, awful lot of them while we were there. So you never forget them.
It was 1997 to win the Golden Slipper. It must have been one of those moments you go home that night and sit down and go, yeah, I did it. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, pretty much. Most nights it was, fish and chips, nice and quiet. When I was with Jack and Bob, it was, 15 to 16, 17, 18 hours a day. So as soon as the races were over Saturday night, you had to get ready for Sunday morning, get ready for next week. So, you always enjoyed, but I suppose in some ways it was more relief. It's done, move on to the next one.
John, there's something on your CV that a lot of people would not be able to put there, and they may be surprised, but I think you actually rode the first winner you ever trained.
Yeah, I did actually. In those days, many years ago, they had dual licences, and it was King of Shadows actually, Strathalbyn. I trained and rode. I had a dual licence for 12 months, and just after that, they started to take the licences away. You had to be one or the other. And I was always going to be a trainer because I was only a B-grade jockey, but it taught me a lot, both sides of the fence. So I sort of got to know what it was like to be in a race and understand what goes on out there, whereas the majority of people will never get that opportunity to, they might see plenty of videos and all that, but nothing like being out in a race. Because it's instantaneous, and you don't get time to be thinking about it. You've got to make it happen as it happens. But no, look, that was a great thrill. And at that time, I think I had three in work, so we wondered where our next horse was coming from, and perhaps even our next winner. But they were sort of humble years, and we've been lucky enough to, over since that period of time to get some really good owners, and as I said, finished with Jack and Bob, and now I'm out with my boys. So it's been a great career, and I've really enjoyed it.
Prior to you taking out the dual license, how long did you ride for, John?
When I was 15, I started riding when I was 15, and I rode till I was 21. So I sort of got 6 years, which, as I said, I think I rode 140 or 50 winners, something like that. I don't know, somewhere around there. And I was lucky enough to win the Moser Stakes at Flemington down the straight, which that was a great thrill because it was part owned by my parents and my old boss trained it. So, that was in an era, as well. We beat Des Judd, Brian Gilders, so that particular day. that was a tremendous thrill, winning it at Flemington. I said, never ever thought I'd get there, but as it's worked out, I've done better at training than jockey, which has been great.
Now, when you kicked off, within about 12 months, you were fortunate enough to come up with a filly called Told Trees. What a ripper.
As I said, my old boss trained a mother to Laudo, and Bob Henniker, who owned Told Trees, always said, when I did take up training, he'd give me a horse to train, and She was one that he gave me just after I'd started. So, and then I got Little Papoose the same year, and with Quinella the Oaks, you know, the same year. So well, I was off to a really good start, you know, with, you know, getting Toltrice and then getting Little Papoose too. So, you know, that gave me...
You wouldn't have had a big stable, would you, at the time, though?
No, no, we only had 8 or 10 in work. Yeah. You know, it's just slowly built, but, you know, never really looked back from that moment on, really. Mm. I mean, although I was in Adelaide for a lot of years, and we only ever had 30 in work in Adelaide. That was a big string of horses in those days, and Colin Hayes was the leading trainer in those days, and, you know, I think he had 80 to 100 at the time, and that was, you know, massive numbers in those days. So, but no, it was a, you know, it was a real great thrill.
I'm chin wagging with John Hawkes. John, that year 72 with Toltrice, you took out not only the Oaks, but you won the Wakeful, the 1,000 guineas as well. Not long after that, Galena Boy came along and you knocked over a Victoria Derby with him.
Yeah, no, that was, you know, we're lucky enough the Browns gave me the opportunity to train one of their horses. And they had a stud at Narung in those days. And, you know, we won the Derby with Johnny Lett. So, you know, that was a real Adelaide connection at that particular time. So, you know, it just, we were lucky. And then I think just after that, I'd got Runyon, who Tommy Smith had trained and broken down, and we got him back that. We won a Perth Cup just after that. So we had a little bit of luck in early stages, and it perhaps set up my career in the early days.
You had a sprinter who was just one of those lovely, tough horses, Cameronic. He was a beauty.
Yeah, no, he was a, you know, really good. He, you know, I wouldn't say he was the elite, but he was a really good sprinter, you know, and those, well, he was a gelding in those days, and there was a lot more geldings around then. Everybody wants colts today, and as I said, that's why there was a lot more racehorses around, because, you know, they were geldings. But, oh, no, he's very, very, just tough sprinter. Him, Harp Hagus, who won an Oakley Plate, was him in Melbourne. So, yeah, that was just another era. Lord Galaxy, you know, that was another era. That we had 2 or 3 really good sprinters.
You had a very good 2-year-old, which I reckon would have helped your career kick along. New Logic, very smart.
Yeah, no, he was. He was, you know, right up with the top of them, and he, you know, at that particular year, you know, so, but he went wrong, unfortunately. So, but it still gave me a really good kick. As I said, we were lucky enough that something always seemed to bob up, which kept us sort of kicking, you know, year in, year out, you know what I mean? So, and you need a flagship, and we were always lucky enough that one used to just keep popping up.
John, you came across to Epsom and trained out of Carbine Lodge there, and that was, I think, you had the elite of owners, like there was Bob LaPointe, the Inghams, you had some terrific owners behind you. How did that all come about?
Yeah, well, I was in Adelaide and, you know, I'd run second on the premiership, I think, to Colin Hayes for 7 out of the last 8 years previous to that. And Bob LaPointe, Norman Carline, Robert Thankster and Jack and Bob Ingham, you know, wanted me to go to Melbourne and train a few horses for them. And I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to go to Epsom. And we had 30 or 40 in work there and perhaps never had the elite. That was the time when Colin Hayes and Brian Mayfield Smith, and they were perhaps getting the cream of the horses. But, you know, we did okay in those, you know, 4 years we were there. And but then that got given me the opportunity that Jack and Bob, you know, take over in Sydney. So, you know, everything leads to something. And if I hadn't got to Melbourne, I wouldn't have got to Sydney. So, you know, you got to keep at it, working hard. You never know what's going to come around the corner.
Hey, you must have felt pretty flash when they flew you up and back in the private jet and landed at Moorabbin Airport. It's like you had your own private plane going up and back.
Yeah, it was pretty flash in those days. I was working in stables with Epsom, and Jack rang up and said, I want you to, you know, fly to Sydney. And I said, oh, I can't do that. I'm too busy with the horses working. He said, don't worry about that, son, he used to call me. And he said, the jet will be at Moorabbin in half an hour. Don't worry about that. Leave your clothes on. Jump on the plane and come to Sydney, and Jack and Bob, you know, I wanted to talk to you. So, and as it turned out, they wanted me to take over the Sydney stable and train for Jack and Bob. And, you know, that was unbelievable, you know, that particular time to get that opportunity. And they flew me up, flew me back same day, and I said I had to discuss it with my wife, you know, who's been the backbone throughout my career. And, you know, I said yes, she said yes. So after that, we, you know, moved to Sydney, and then we set up Sydney, and, oh, well, started to slowly build from there, and then we went from, you know, Sydney to Melbourne to Adelaide and you know, Queensland.
Brisbane,
so we had
yeah.
four stables going at once at one particular time. So, but they were just fantastic years. I mean, we had some fantastic horses in that period, you know, long rows, octagonals, you know, they're just, the list goes on and on. So I've been lucky enough in my career to train, you know, some superstar horses.
Well, Gerald Ryan said to me, he remembers being at Morfordville with you one morning, leaning on the rail, and he said it was probably about March, and you confided in him and said, I think I've got the best horse I may ever train or ever have trained at that point. And Gerald said, you probably would have only bought the horse like in the January, and it was octagonal.
Yeah, that, you know, he was just a special horse from the moment we bought him. You know, we went to New Zealand, Jack and Bob, and Trevor Lobb that particular time, and he sort of, well, we seen him, brought him out of the box, walked him up 20, 30 yards, and I said, thank you very much, put him away. I said, I've seen enough. And Jack said, well, Jesus, son, you didn't look at him much. I said, don't have to, we're just going to buy him, just going to buy him. So we did, that's what we did. I think we, I forget what we paid, 130,000 at the time, somewhere around there, I think.
Which was a bit of money.
A lot of money in those days. So, but he was just one horse for the moment we seen him. And that was the same as when he come into the stable and the first time we galloped him. He was just a special horse from day one. It sort of, so it just kept building from there and he turned out to be a superstar.
I would love to have had a heart rate monitor on you when he raced because he'd always get out the back and he'd look like he was going to do it hard. He never won by big margins. He was just an absolute fighter who'd wear him down and get there right on the line. He must have nearly had a heart attack a couple of times, I reckon.
Yeah, he was that sort of horse, though, Shawnee. You know, I mean, everyone said he was like a little bit one-paced. Well, he used to give them all, you know, 8 and 10 length start. And he only used to get up and win by short margins, but you work out the sectionals, he couldn't win by much more because the sectionals that he was running from where he was against the horses he was running against were unbelievable. And as I said, you can't win by panels, but that was his style of racing. As I said, he was just a super, super star, and I've trained a lot of good horses in my day, but he's perhaps still, well, still nearly number one, I think, you know, overall, as I said, you know, long row, Chautauqua. We've had some superstar, All Too Hard, but he's just always going to be my favourite, I think.
Yeah. Interesting point, Gerald said. He was foreman for you in Melbourne there at one stage. He said you won the provincial championship one year, and this was going the other extreme from like octagonal to the other. He said he thinks that particular year, 42 of the races you won were actually maidens. So you turned through so many horses but got them ready and won races with nearly, just about everything you got won a race.
Yeah, we did. You know, Gerald was my foreman down in Melbourne for, you know, many years. And as I said, we never had what we call A-grade horse. But as I said, it's all about, you know, getting the best out of your horses and trying to win. And a maiden to a lot of owners is really their Melbourne Cup. As I said, people don't realise how hard it is to win a race. And as I said, just to get the opportunity to win races. But that particular time, nearly everything we ran, we won with, and that's really what we had a few slow ones too, but overall, we tried to place them where we thought they could win.
Now, you gave Gerald some interesting jobs. One you might remember, you used to send him every afternoon for a fruit and nut chocolate and a Coke.
In those days, that was my specialty, but and I still do it occasionally, but perhaps not as much as I used to, but, you know, I don't drink the Coke like I used to on water now, and Cadbury's nut milk chocolate's my favourite, and I still have it occasionally, but not like I used to. But he was, you know, while he was under me, he, you know, he was a hard worker at the time, and you know, as I said, hopefully he learned a little bit, which you know, hopefully he did. But he turned out to be a good trainer in his own right.
You know, he's got one burning desire, absolutely one thing he wants to do in a race you're in, and so far he has. You've done it to him many times, but he has not been able to do it to you. Group 1 races, he said he's won them and you've finished down the track. But he said the number of times when you've won and he's run second, he can't wait to win a Group 1 and have you run second. But he said you've turned to him and just said the student never beats the tutor.
Well, you know, you can say it, but it doesn't always work. Doesn't always work that particular way. So,
No,
as I said, you know, over the years, a lot of people have worked, you know, been worked with me, and I've been out of work with them. You know, it's Gerald and his own right, and Greg Hickman, you know, Peter Snowden, and Simon Zahr and Matthew Earlton. All those guys used to work for me, but they were people that always wanted to go somewhere, and they were really hard workers too. So, as I said, hard work won't kill you, but a lot of other things will.
Yep. I'm chinwagging with John Hawkes. John, you had some wonderful riders over the years. There's one bloke that I'm going to mention, I reckon was probably one of the most valuable riders you ever had, and that's Rod Quinn.
Yeah, he was the backbone when we were at Crown. You know, at the time, Darren Biedman, Corey Brown, perhaps they were the main riders, but Rodney Quinn was a real horseman. That's what he was. He's a real horse, which there ain't many of them around today. They're jockeys, but doesn't mean they're horsemen. But he was a real gentleman, you know, as I said, and being a horseman, and he was what I call the backbone of the stable. And yeah, we give him a lot of opportunities, but he used to, you know, he repaid us by doing a lot of work behind the scenes, that Darren and Corey had won on at different times. But, a true gentleman, and he still is today.
Darren Biedman said you were an absolute champion coach, or like a tutor. He said you were wonderful like that. He said even though he went to ride for you in his 30s, he learned so much from you.
Well, I try to, you know, help the jocks as much as I can. As I said, I was lucky enough to ride, and I understand what goes on out there, whereas the majority of people don't. But if I can help any boys that ride for me, if I can help them 1%, 5%, or whatever the case may be, that's going to give us the opportunity that we'll train, you know, some more winners, you know, through the season. So, you know, the less mistakes they make, it's more chance that, you know, we're going to have more winners. So, you know, as I said, I try to help them as much as I can. And as I said, everyone knows me for perhaps going mad at the jockeys, but at the same time, over the years, I've still complimented because when they ride them well, but nobody really wants to hear that.
Well, I was talking to Darren Gouchy, and I said, the Gouch, he laughed. He said, I'll tell you one thing, when you got a spray, you got it first hand. He said, you didn't come second hand, he'd line you up and give it to you.
well, as we used to work, you know, the boys and all the staff, and you know, we used to work 7 days a week. The owners paid, you know, a lot of money for horses. And to us, we were very professional. And that's what I expected from the jockeys and still do today. As I said, it's more a business now. It used to be perhaps more a sport in those days. But it's even more so what you call a business today, more than anything. And you know, we still, you know, the boys and I even today are still working hard. I'm still at the stables now. Pottering along, so you know we work long hours, long days, and so do the jockeys. They ride every day and that too, but you know we feel we're very professional, and I like the jockeys to be the same way.
Well, you thought a lot of the Gouch. You gave him his last ride in the race, and I said to him, what are your memories of John? And he said, tell Hawksy, I won one at Caulfield one day and came back and you looked at him and said, God, you're lucky I can train. He said, when I got off it, I thought to myself, God, I'm lucky at one.
No, I can't do it without the jocks either. As I said, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good trainers out there, you know, a lot better than me, and there'll be some young ones on the way through. So, but all I can say is, if you work hard, enjoy what you do, you'll generally be successful.
Now, Johnny did give you up on something too, Darren Gouchy.
Yeah, what
he
was
said
that?
He said to tell you he's lucky he's got any chest hairs left, he said, because you'd come in the jockey's room. I said, in the room? He said, yep, and give me a nipple twist just to wake him up and say, you're awake.
Well, that just keeps them nice and sharp, you know. That's what I always like to do to the jocks, you know. And most of them at some stage or another had one of them, so, but it's all in good fun, as it is, Sean. And as I said, I've worked together with a lot of jockeys over a long, long period of time. And two that you mentioned, Darren Biedman and Darren Gouchy, well, they're both real gentleman, and two riders, you know, where they're as good as you'll ever see.
Now, 1995, when Octagonal won the Cox Plate, I asked the jocks as well, said, did John ever show much emotion? And they all said, not outwardly, but inwardly, you could see that you were really pleased. But yet, 1995, Octagonal Cox Plate, a couple of them have said to me, hey, you didn't take the sunglasses off that day. There might have been a tear in the eye.
Yeah, it was a pretty emotional day that day. I mean, we perhaps thought he might even be the year after before he's really at his best. But just to win the Cox Plate for Jack and Bob, for what they've done, you know, had done for me at that particular time. And, you know, it pushed us to another, pushed Jack and Bob to another level because they'd spent a lot of money and perhaps hadn't had a lot of success. And even though I'd trained a lot of Group 1 winners, I mean, to win a Cox Plate, that's very special. Mm. And it was just a real special day and perhaps, you know, a bit more of that. It was a little emotional that day. As I said, that's why I left the sunglasses on.
A bit like Bart Cummings with the hay fever.
Yeah, a little bit like that, I suppose you could say. So, you know, that's most probably what I did have, you know, that particular day. So not so much a tear, just the hay. And I still get hay fever today, so.
Yeah, we'll believe you.
That was special. It was a special day that day.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, the day America came, the Melbourne Cup, you had Malachi Day in, that must have been an exciting day.
Yeah, no, that was, you know, like, it was a great day, even though we ran second. It was just a horse that we brought, well, we bought him in New Zealand as a yearling, brought him from the bottom virtually right to the top, and we nearly got to the Melbourne Cup. So, you know, he was a, you know, very special horse at that particular time. Nick Moraitis had quite a few horses for me and supported us really well. But he got sick just after that. Otherwise, I think he'd have gone to the top of the tree and perhaps won a Melbourne Cup. But he got sick after that Melbourne Cup and was never the same a horse again after that. But even though we ran second, it was a good thrill. But it's not as good as winning Chawn. No. So I'm not really a person that likes to run second. You know, I like to win.
I got to tell you, what an amazing effort, though. That horse, he ran second in the Melbourne Cup, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was only his ninth start in a race.
Yeah, he hadn't had a lot of racing. As I said, he was only a young horse, and we'd brought him along, you know, really quiet. He'd always shown nice ability as a young horse, and in those days, the Bills, they got better as they get older, and same thing, when he ran second in the Cup, we thought it was fantastic. We were looking forward to next year, but as I said, unfortunately, he got sick, and he was never the same horse again after that.
John, these days, the tracks we race on, they try and have a little bit of give in them, but I recall going back years ago when they were drier and harder, you used to tape the front bumpers on it pretty well every horse, and it wasn't they had an issue, it was just merely as protection, and it was almost a trademark. They'd go out with white tape on the front fetlocks.
Yeah, I suppose you could say it was more for protection than anything. You know, it's just a bit like a, you know, support. I mean, they don't have firm tracks as much as what they used to. Albeit I still like the firm track, you know, to me. I mean, that's what summer racing is. And, you know, as I said, firm ground. Admittedly, the horses aren't as tough today as what they used to be. But, no, it was just something that we, you know, that we used to do if we thought it needed just to, you know, they weren't sore or anything. It just, you know, it just gave them that little bit more support.
How tough a two-year-old was Yell? Because he raced in Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane as a two-year-old.
Yeah, very, very, very tough horse, and he had a throat problem from the day, you know, he first came into the stable as a young horse, and it, you know, deteriorated a little bit. It got him through his whole career. You know, he was not a roarer, but he always had a problem with his throat. We had to have a tongue tie on him, but very, very genuine horse. As I said, the horses in those days, to me, were a lot tougher than what they are today. I don't know. They're soft, maybe, as I said, you know, but I think a lot of people are a bit the same way. They're a bit softer than what they used to be, so in my opinion anyway. So as I've always said, hard work won't kill you, but plenty of other things will.
John, you've had some fantastic horses. There's one name I'm going to bowl up to get your reaction, Unworldly.
Yeah, oh, she was really, really special. I mean, she was, well, she was the elite and would have been the elite. You know, if she unfortunately, you know, hadn't, you know, well, you know, gone wrong, unfortunately. So, but no, she was just something really, really special. Never really seen the best of her, unfortunately. But that does happen a lot in this game. Sometimes, you know, the best horses don't get there or you don't see the best of them. So, you know, and as I said, but I'm sure if, you know, if you're getting well, we had to put it down, unfortunately, but if that hadn't gone wrong, she'd have gone on to be what you call the real elite. And she'd have been up with, you know, any you know, filly that we've ever trained.
She won 5 out of 6 the same morning that happened in Sydney. In Melbourne, I think, was it over? Broke down as well. And it's within about half an hour, you'd lost 2 good horses.
Yeah, I was at Warwick Farm. You know, she just galloped and we just lost her. And Wayne rang about 20 minutes later and, you know, said, you know, Over's just, you know, torn the ligaments in his, on his suspensory. So it was just one of those days where we had, you know, a couple of... But those sort of things happen day in, day out when you're dealing with animals. And as I said, there's a lot of that goes on that people don't really see, you know, behind the scenes. I mean, it's not the track's fault. It's, you know, the tracks were actually very good at that particular time. It's just that they're a big animal. They're 500 kilos or more. And, you know, it's all about speed. And, well, sometimes they put their leg down awkward. Those things happen, unfortunately. It's naturally, it's always disappointing when it happens to any horse, not only, you know, the top level ones.
John, let's look back. Which is your favourite? Was it Octagonal? Is he the one you'd pat first if you walked down the line of boxes?
Oh, I think it'd always be Octagonal. I mean, you know, as I said, Tall Trees really got me started. You know, as I said, Long Row, as I said, he's a superstar. He's gone on to be a superstar stallion. Perhaps Octagonal never did it at stud. Albeit he, you know, produced, you know, Long Rope, you know what I mean? So, you know, but I suppose if I really, you know, really, you know, I said Chautauqua, he's perhaps the best sprinter we've ever trained. But if I really had to, I still think Octagonal, you know, he's always going to be something special to me.
You had some wonderful race wins and exciting ones. I mean, Lonro in the Australian Cup race, Estijab last year in the Golden Slipper. Is there one race for you that stands out that you look at and go, holy hell, that was just a ripper?
Yeah, the Rider. When Long Row won the Rider, when he won that particular race that day, to me, I don't think any horse in the world would have beat him on that particular day. That was just, he was in the zone, and, you know, and that's how he performed. And, you know, you get races like that. I mean, the Australian Cup, he would have been unlucky to get beat that particular day, but in saying that, Octagonal, when he won the Australian Cup 24 hours before, the horse couldn't walk. He had a foot abscess, and Wayne and all the boys were up all night, you know, just, you know, bathing his foot for 24 hours before just to get him to the races. So, and, it, you know, he actually was still properly on the day, but he worked through it. That's the sort of horse he was, and he won the Australian Cup. So, you know, they're things you never, ever, 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 ever forget.
When he won the Rider, he beat Dash for Cash and Defier, and he ran his last 632.47, which back then was fair dinkum low flying.
Yeah, no, well, as I said, he was a special horse. He, Octagonal was more the, what you call the stayer. You know, he should have nearly won a Golden Slipper, so you can't say that. But at the same time, he was more the staying horse. Long Row was more the sprinter miler. So they're a little bit different sort of horses in that respect, but in their own way, you know, they're champions in their own right.
How do you rank Chautauqua's win in Hong Kong? That was a beauty.
Yeah, well, it, you know, most probably of all the wins I've ever had in my career, it's perhaps number one now because, you know, to go overseas, win a Group One with Rupert Lee and all his partner, you know, great people. And not only that, to do it with my two sons. It's just it's hard to replicate that type of day, emotion and everything that went through. And it was a lot of hard work, you know, to get there and to pull that off. I mean, that's just, well, as I said, you know, I've had some great wins and like the Cox Plates and Riders and all that. But I think as far as a win's concerned, I think the one in Hong Kong, well, who knows? Hopefully we'll get one even better in the future. But at this point in time, I think that's number one.
I've got to ask a question from Gary Harley about one today. Tapaconic, how much potential has it got?
Yeah, he's a promising young horse. He's still not quite there yet. He'll be better next season, but he's a lovely horse. He's had a couple of nice trials, and he's owned by some, you know, American people, and that actually have got Tappet in America. So it'd be great to start off with a win. And I think if he brings his trial form and does everything right, it's a race he can win today. And the 1200 on the big Newcastle track suits. So I think, you know, with even luck in the run, it's a race he can win.
We're going to have to do another chin wag one day because I've only asked half my questions. You know that, don't you? You'll have to come back down the track one day, John.
Hopefully I'm here for a few more years, Sean. So, you know, I'll be happy to catch up with you again.
Oh, mate, that's fantastic. Really appreciate today. It's been great to reminisce and look back over some wonderful years. And, well, gee, we're some beautiful horses too.
Yeah, no, I've been blessed, you know, to, you know, have some, you know, train and, you know, for some great people. And as I said, you know, I've had great staff, jockeys, and there's a lot of people that helped us, you know, over a lot of period of time. But I'm really enjoying what I'm doing with my, you know, my two sons now. So, you know, as I said, you know, I'm in the twilight of my career, I suppose you could say. So, but I want to be around for another 10 or 20 years yet. So, you know, hopefully we can train a lot more winners.
Terrific. John, I really appreciate your time and good luck today with the horses too.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, John. John Hawkes, great to have him on to have a chin wag with today.